Good morning and welcome to CrossLink Radio, where we talk about health from the eye teeth on down, where we talk about things that integrate oral and systemic health and how to affect both and how to make both healthier. Today, I thought we would talk. My name is Shirley Kutkowski, just so I don't want to forget that part. And I am your host today on CrossLink Radio. I'm just so twitched up about getting this audio recording going because I really wanted to talk about being a dental hygienist as an oral environmentalist. And that, you know, was kind of in the forefront of my mind as I was sitting chairside the last three working days. And I wanted to present a way where all of us can be healthier if we include the health of the mouth. And there were just so many opportunities. There were so many opportunities to make that happen these last couple of days that I thought it would be worth it to just have a conversation as I also am offering my website to some of the patients that I'm seeing at the clinic. So one of the things that showed up this past few days was a suicide tooth. And it was a very unusual, or maybe it was a usual situation, where the tooth was alone in its pathology. Usually when we see teeth that are going south, the neighboring tooth, the tooth opposing it, you know, either directly above or below it, or directly on the opposite side of the arch is also affected. And so it's always a surprise when one tooth decides it's just going to give up. And it's already had a root canal maybe, it's already had this maybe, it's already had that maybe, and that's what was happening on the tooth that I'm referring to, in that it already had a root canal, and here underneath the crown it started to decay, and the patient was in a decision-making place now, because now he's got this tooth that's likely going to come out. The best option for that tooth was to come out. It had been injured in, I don't know, he was in the service, but it wasn't like a war injury. It was just, you know, a dumb thing kind of an injury. I don't remember anymore what it was. But here we were presented with a tooth that really just wanted to go. And the best option was going to be to have that tooth removed. And in so doing, there would be a space there, and then what to do about that space. Now, ideally, that space would be best served having an implant placed. An implant is a couple thousand dollars, and it replaces the tooth, and it'll never decay. It can still get periodontal disease. It can still get the disease of the tissue around that implant, but the chances of that happening are pretty slim. So I feel pretty confident recommending an implant for a tooth. So that was my recommendation. But you could see the panic in this guy's face. He's working two jobs. He's got two of his three kids in braces. And really, if money was no object, he should have had braces as well to open up his airway, which would have helped to cure his gastric maladies that he was having and his migraines. So here we sit now with a diverse list of problems, right? The guy's got migraines. He's got GI issues. He has some, I think he was insomnia or some other kind of a sleep. Maybe it wasn't insomnia. Anyway, I thought there was some other kind of an issue with an airway. And all of that really, except for the suicide tooth, could have been repaired by having this patient go to an orthodontist that focused on airway and opened up his arches, made room for all of his teeth, put an implant into the space that was going to be created by having the suicide tooth removed, and everything would have settled down. We would have also, I would have, in my utopia. Well, you know what? That's kind of weird. If it was really utopia, he wouldn't have any of these problems, right? So in this quasi-utopia, where people do what I say and no, there's no expense spared, he would have had braces. He would have had an implant placed. He would have been on a xylitol protocol. And all would have been right with the world. And apparently I'm having a mucus attack, so excuse me as I take another swig of water. So it's all of that kind of stuff that really makes me want to continue these podcasts, because this isn't necessarily something that gets looked at as a whole. What usually happens is dentists look at dentist problems and hygienists look at plaque problems, and never the two shall meet. And the dental hygienist is in a supportive position so that the dentist can see what holes are present that the dentist can fill. And I've run into enough dentists to know that that's not the ideal practice. Dentists don't necessarily like doing that. Some dentists have gone into other little side disciplines. Some of them are doing orthodontics. Some of them are working with TMJ patients. And so that's not really a specialty, although orthodontics is a specialty, but a lot of GPs are doing ortho. And so we have that situation. And then we have the dental hygienist who is always, always, always yelling at people about brushing and flossing and finding better and easier ways to brush and floss. And that came up this week also. I was seeing a kid who had one area of decay, but it was in a primary tooth that was going to be lost soon. I think he had three teeth left that he needed to wiggle out. They were just barely in there. And then I was talking to the mother about an airway issue and about this arch expander that he had placed 3 years ago, and the orthodontist that put it in is no longer in the area and it's just been sitting there. The mother had asked me about his bad breath and would I teach him to brush better, which of course I did because he needed it and the mother requested it. But there was in this arch expander, now imagine this, you have the palate, you have band around both of the 6-year molars, the first molars. You have a wire, a really hefty wire, that is bent appropriately to hold the space and kind of maybe expand the arch a little bit. And that wire goes forward towards the anterior teeth, bends around, and then goes backwards to meet with the other 6-year molar. And at the precipice, at the top, at the anterior part of the maxilla, at the premaxilla stage, was a huge piece of plastic. So it had to have been 1 by 2 centimeters for sure. And this was pressed up against the patient's palate. And guess what was under there? Everything! That's where his mouth odor was coming from. So I showed him how to remove the plaque, remove the debris with super floss, that fuzzy floss, and I showed him a little bit how to do it. I don't know if he'll be able to do it because it's tricky. And so I did the best I could. So this other hygienist comes in with the brother who had like 6 areas of decay. The mother was mortified but understanding. And this hygienist was going on telling the mother how to get her child to better brush. He was 6 or so, 7. And this mother said, I brush his teeth for him every night. This is the exact scenario that I've been using in my courses since 2000, since my very first. I use this as an example, although I used it as an infant instead of a 7-year-old kid. But this mother brushes this kid every day, and he still had 6 cavities. And now the hygienist is saying, well, maybe he could sit and watch TV with a dry toothbrush and just kind of brush his teeth as he's just watching television. And I said, because I just can't stop sometimes, I said, this is a really good example of a family that could benefit a lot from a xylitol protocol. And the hygienist did not miss a beat. And she said, yeah, that's a good idea. Trident is a really good gum that you can use. And I was like, whoa. I couldn't restrain. Part of my head was going, shut up, Shirley. Be as nice as possible. And I was almost as nice as possible, but I did make it to be nice. And I said, xylitol, there is not enough xylitol in Trident gum to really make a difference. And she looked at me like, oh, oh, oh. And she didn't know what to say because she was on her roll. And I said, you really need to get a tooth or a gum that only has xylitol in it. And that with that, you're pretty much only going to be using the Spry products. And so I wrote that all up with her for the mother. The other hygienist agreed with me as best she could, even though she was still wondering what the heck did I just say and what just happened. And the mother left with directions on how to use xylitol products 5 times a day. And so that was another really good example of a huge global, round, spherical kind of an approach to the family with dental decay problems. They're passing these germs around whether they know it or not. And once you have that bacteria in your mouth, you really have to fight hard to adjust that flora to be more healthful. And the best and easiest and funnest way to do that is to use xylitol sugar. I didn't have an opportunity to say it to everybody. Not everybody in my schedule needed xylitol. So I don't want you to think that everybody I talk to has xylitol and that's the only thing they get. I really try to sit back and think my way through all of the different things that will help this patient. And xylitol is one of them. So we have to really, we as hygienists have a lot of this information at our fingertips, but unless we talk about it, there were a pile of hygienists there that day. And unless we look to find other answers besides brushing and flossing, our patients can't be as healthy as we think they can be, because you can't just brush and floss away 6 cavities. It's just not possible. So that's why I'm also offering coaching for consumers who are having problems like this with their family or with their with just themselves. There are so many other ways to approach dental decay now that we didn't know, especially in 1986. I mean, this mouth breathing thing was, yeah, mouth breathing is bad. Let's get our patients to breathe through their nose. But nobody really talked about how to get people to breathe through their nose. So that's why, you know, I've also been trained in oral facial myofunctional therapy. So I can see patients on my own, on their own time, and I can help them learn how to make the muscles of their mouth work better so that they have a wider arch, so that they're not swallowing air, so that, oh, that was another case. That was a good one too. This little boy, 4 years old, he had a pretty good tongue tie. And oh my gosh, that was another one. I hope I don't forget to to tell you all of these because they were just so cool. And you know, he had some GI problems, the mother ended up telling me. He had a nice arch, but his tongue was really kind of glued down to the bottom of his, to the floor of his mouth, almost to the tip. And so I asked the doctor, what did she think about it, which was appropriate, and she agreed that maybe the oral surgeon would be interested in or has the skill to do that surgery to release the tongue. And, of course, the kid's 4, and not every oral surgeon is going to see a 4-year-old, so I've got my fingers crossed that that's going to happen. But as I was talking to the mother and giving her, you know, kind of information about tongue tie and airway and all of this other stuff, she goes, yeah, he's got some GI problems. I said, well, he's probably swallowing a lot of air, when he's eating. And she goes, could that interfere with his speech? And I said, yeah, it really can. Not that his speech was bad, but she goes, everybody else in the family has really clear speech. And his younger sister, 2 years old, is clear as a bell. Nobody has trouble understanding her. But this little boy had a lot of trouble being understood. So I was like, yeah, this is probably the best answer then for you to let's move forward with trying to find somebody who can help, you know, to do that surgical procedure. Is it painful? I don't know. They do it as infants often. And so that's something to put into play too. And that kind of brings me to my next example. I had a young woman in the chair and I was cleaning her teeth and everything was good. And we started talking about her. She's done breastfeeding. So she was no longer taking prenatal vitamins. So, you know, we had to make an adjustment on her health history. And, so I asked her how breastfeeding had gone for her, because that's another indication that the kid is tongue-tied if there's a lot of problems with breastfeeding. And she said she was breastfeeding without problems until the kid was 10 months old. And then she gave it up because her work schedule had changed or something. And so that was great. And I let it all drop. I thought, okay, no problems here. Then with further conversation, I don't even know how the conversation turned back around that direction, but she told me that her baby's tongue was tied, and they released that tongue when that baby was just born. And I said, oh my gosh, you must have had some kind of a lactation specialist or nurse midwife or something like that. She goes, yeah, I did. And I'll tell you, we had just moved up from, I don't know, Iowa, I guess it was. And they'd moved to one small city in Wisconsin because her husband got a job here. And she was already 8 months pregnant, so she had to find all of these healthcare providers. And then she has a baby, and oh, well, let's do some surgery, right? The kid is a day or two old. And then they moved from that temporary housing to their regular spot here in Madison, and then she had to find all these healthcare providers all over again. So she had quite a little, she was quite distracted those first few months, but it was very interesting to me that that baby had a tongue tie release at a very, very young age. I can't remember now if she said it was, I didn't know I had such a sieve of a memory. So she'd already had that baby's tongue tie repaired and everything was going well. One thing though that happened twice in these last few days is that two mothers said to me separately, I think it was even two different days, my baby is two, when should I start bringing them to the dentist? And I was like, yesterday, we want to see kids at the first tooth. And they both looked at me like, what are you going to do with a, you know, 7-month-old kid or an 11-month-old kid? And we're not going to do an entire cleaning on that kid. We're not going to scrape the teeth. We're not going to be using sharp instruments. We're not going to be doing any of that. What we're going to be doing is making sure that there is no tongue tie. We're going to make sure that the teeth are coming in at the right period. We're going to have a happy appointment with the child so that as the child gets older, they continuously have happy appointments. We're going to talk to you about pacifiers, finger sucking, fluoride treatment or not. We're going to talk to you about how to clean that baby's mouth and what to use and what not to use. We're going to be doing anticipatory guidance with you, the parent. We're not going to do very much to the child at all. It'll be a nice, happy appointment. We'll give the kid a free toothbrush. Let them, if they're old enough to dig through the prize box, we'll let them pick out a prize. And yahoo for that. So that's been my last few days in the dental office. So I'm telling you, this is really, it's really fun for me to approach this so globally and have a real rounded spherical kind of approach to this and looking at all of these different aspects of dental decay and periodontal disease, particularly the two big ones, right? Oh, that was another one. I did an oral cancer screening using the fluorescence technology, which I've been kind of avoiding. I'm doing, you know, the old-fashioned style of oral cancer screening. And I thought, Shirley, just get over it and go get the machine and take a look around in there. And I had a patient with this orange, yes, orange, spot on this girl's tonsil that was glowing orange. And I thought, oh my gosh, what is that? And so I moved the light and it was there. It was like a white pimple on her tonsil. And I said, wow, you look like, looks like you have a tonsil stone. And she's like, oh my gosh, what is that? So she had a little panic fit. And she's also somebody that I recommended see the airway dentist that we have in our group. She had a very narrow arch. She had a lot of, she couldn't sleep laying down. She was very big around. She could only sleep in the chair because she would lose her breath. She couldn't breathe through her nose. She could only breathe through her mouth. I mean, it was a really interesting couple of days. So, so that's kind of what I wanted to talk about today and really helping everybody understand that this is not just a brushing and flossing problem, and that this is why, you know, because in the groove of seeing patients all the time, you don't have a lot of opportunities, even when you get home, to peruse the internet. You've got your own children. You've got things going on in the evening. Your husband's on bowling league, and you're, you know, at the shooting range or whatever. And you know, you have a life outside of dentistry. Well, I don't. I do all of this stuff constantly. So it's really interesting to me to put these all together. So one of the things that I didn't really get to talk about were some of the other foods that are known to be reducers of oral biofilm. So let's, I'm going to take just another tiny little water break here, and then we'll come back and talk about some of those foods.
If you enjoy the content and point of view, please leave a favorable review on Stitcher, iTunes, or Blog Talk Radio. To have Shirley be your personal oral health coach, you can reach out to her via email, shirley@crosslinkradio.com. And now, back to the show.
Some of those foods are kind of interesting in that they are very much like the anti-inflammatory foods that you would find in an anti-inflammatory diet. So that's really a key thing here, because these are foods that are multifaceted and they are really helpful in knowing how to reduce inflammation, which also affects the cavity-causing bacteria. I'm not kidding. This cavity-causing bacteria is very susceptible to the proanthocyanidins found in highly colored foods. So foods like blackberries, raspberries, all the berries, plums, all of that kind of stuff. But for me and my purposes, I am really, you know, I'm only at this office or at these offices on occasion. So it's really hard to go over a huge dietary change with my patients because I'm not going to see them again. So that's why I stick mainly with talking about xylitol. But there are other things, and there are other kinds of gum and other gum ingredients that are helpful. For instance, magnolia bark, which is in one of the Wrigley's gums, which I think it'll come to me in just a minute. Bicarbonate is in Wrigley Orbit White. It's the only gum that Wrigley makes that has the bicarbonate in it, unless they took it out. So the thing with gum is that the ingredients list change really often. And so you need to check all the time. So you want gum with a bicarbonate in there to buffer the acids that are in your mouth after you eat a eat food. Erythritol, you're going to find that in more and more gum. Green tea, Spry has a green tea gum, and cranberry. Anything with cranberry proanthocyanidins is an awesome, awesome thing. I'm also finding that there are some researchers looking at some real unusual types of products used for tongue cleaning. For instance, raspberry, plantain mixtures, nettle, and dandelion. So dandelion tea, and now it's spring when I'm recording this, and it's dandelion season. It's almost summer. I guess summer's just in a couple of days, but dandelion tea would be a really good use to use for tongue cleaning. Xylitol is always going to be first on my list. It's the fastest, and it's the easiest, and it's the most studied out of all of these other foods that we're talking about today. So that's really a piece of information that you should use. So let's go back now again for 1 second to the Trident conversation that I had with the other hygienist. She stopped me in the sterilization room. She goes, well, what's wrong with Trident? It doesn't have enough xylitol in it. I said, no, it has very little xylitol in. She goes, well, how come they can say it on the package? I said, well, it's a marketing term. It doesn't imply any health benefits. You know, we're the ones, I didn't say that part, but we're the ones who are supposed to know the difference. We're the ones who are supposed to know that Trident has a tiny, tiny bit of xylitol in. And I said to her, now, if you were to have your patients use xylitol and they used it 5 times a day and they still got cavities, what would you think? You would think xylitol doesn't work. You would never think that xylitol, you know, there wasn't enough xylitol in there. You just, you know, the way that we talk about xylitol in dentistry in general is that it's there, and we don't always make sure to say you need to have 5 applications at least. The reason that we came to 5 is because of Spry and their dosage of their gum and their mints is 2 chiclets of gum or 2 little candies, and those come to 1.5 grams. And the last research that was done, I think it was 2009 out of University of Washington, and Dr. Milgram had determined that we need between 6 and 10 grams to get the effect that we want to on dental decay. And so far, we can't get less than 1 year. So that's what I've been telling patients. 5 times a day with the xylitol for about 1 year, and then you're good. They stopped looking after 6 years out when people were still having benefits from this gum or from this ingredient. So there you go. That's really an awesome piece of information for you to use. Something that has a lot of xylitol in it. Over-the-counter gum that has the most xylitol in, has 1.5 grams per serving, and a serving is 1 piece, is Icebreakers. But it also has intense sweeteners in there, so a lot of people don't like using it because of that. Flavor lasts a long time. It's more like traditional gum, but we want to have, you know, 5 times during the day in order to get those 6 grams, and your face is going to hurt like a lot if you chew a piece of gum for 45 minutes 5 times in a day. You're not going to continue. So that's why the Spry gum is more of a delivery tool than it is of a happy chewing gum kind of a gum, because the flavor is gone in 5 minutes. You really can only chew it for like 8 minutes. And then you're like, where's the garbage? And I also wanted to spend 1 second talking about the difference between xylitol, which is good for teeth, and the other polyols, which are not bad for teeth, most notably sorbitol with an S. And sorbitol is a higher ranked sugar in the ingredients list in Trident. So you know there's a lot of sorbitol in there. But sorbitol is digested by the acid-loving bacteria, and they do convert it to acid. So you don't want to have sorbitol if you can help it. So we need to get this xylitol thing going, everybody. There you go. That's it for CrossLink Radio for this week. Have a great rest of the weekend. That's coming up. And next week, we're going to be back again with new topics and new interviews and all kinds of things. So have a great rest of the day.